Twin Flames is a podcast created by best friends and twin flames, Chloe and Hillary, about personal development, shifting the perspective, and getting in touch with the best version of yourself. Chloe is a practicing eclectic witch, entrepreneur, and clairvoyant. Hillary is a mindfulness expert, happiness educator, and practicing therapist trainee. We combine our strengths and knowledge to bring you the best of what we've found has been helpful to us on our respective journeys.
So you guys should see our motherfucking summoning circles right now. They're not legitimate summoning circles, but might as well be. We recognize that it's Mercury retrograde while we're recording. And it's Mercury retrograde, by the way, if you're listening to this during the, like, from July, I think it started on the 7th, 2019, and it will go until July 31st, 2019. Mercury, our planet of communication, is basically, it's not actually going backwards, but it gives the illusion that it is. And it just, like, fucks with technology and communication, and we are feeling it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we have, like, all the candles and all of our, like, best communication crystals out. Yes.
It's so true, though.
Oh, my God.
Isn't it, like, also a bunch of other weird retrogrades or something?
Oh, my God. We have so much going on astrologically right now. Like, we're coming up on a full moon in Capricorn eclipse, which that's going to be major. We have Saturn in retrograde. We have Pluto in retrograde. Neptune in retrograde. It's, like, the fucking season of retrogrades right now. Oh, and everybody's path is unclear. And it's Cancer season. So we're all being asked to, like, look at our shadow sides and deal with them. And, like, it's
everybody's thing.
Just going through a lot. And then, like, even on, like, a global perspective, we've had earthquakes cropping up.
True, though.
There's just crazy. A lot. And also something I didn't mention to you before we started, Hillary. Jupiter is in Sagittarius for the rest of the year. It's been there since Sagittarius season last year. And Sagittarius is, like, the social justice, like, warrior.
Hey.
So we're basically having, like, social justice this whole year. We're seeing so much change. Jupiter's also in retrograde.
Oh my God, everything's in retrograde.
I think Jupiter's been in retrograde since, like, something stupid, though. Something like April or March, and it won't come out of retrograde, I think, until August.
Oh, wow. That's
so it's been crazy. In retrograde for a huge chunk of the year, and that's, like, social justice and, like, the father of blessings and, like, fortune and gifts in that aspect.
Interesting.
So.
Great.
I could sit and talk about astrology all day, but that's not why we're here.
Although that last piece is, like, weirdly related to what we're talking about with the social justice stuff.
Yes.
I mean, but that's also just generally related to the new swing that our podcast is taking.
Yes.
So yeah, we are starting kind of doing things a little differently.
If you guys listened to the last episode, we kind of covered what we're going to be doing now. And
yes, yeah. Exactly. So this is going to be, the first episode of kind of a two-parter kind of thing.
Yes.
And what are we talking about today, Chloe?
We're talking about social conditioning.
Yes, we are. And it's great.
Oh, social conditioning. I think today I even showed you a thing, which I'll talk about that a little bit later when we get into, like, the discussion. Remember I showed you that Instagram post and I was like, this is just a social construct.
Yeah, that's true. Social conditioning is such, like, oh my gosh, such a big topic too.
It is.
Like, I mean, I'm sure there's things that we will accidentally miss or skip over because there's so much to talk about.
Oh yeah, like, we could literally dedicate an entire podcast just to social conditioning.
It's so true. So, you know, you all know us, we love a good definition, so that's where we're starting. I'm not even gonna lie about this is straight from Wikipedia, so
that's how we roll on this podcast, straight up out of Wikipedia.
I mean, you know, that's where a lot of us get some info. But I think for basic definitions, it's cool. For stuff like full-on research, maybe not so much.
Maybe not.
You know? So, social conditioning is the sociological process of training individuals in a society to respond in a manner generally approved by the society in general and peer groups within society.
Yes. And Hillary, you actually had a really good way of kind of putting that into perspective. I can't remember exactly what it was called, but it had something to do with like dogs.
Oh,
and salivation.
Yeah. Yeah. Pavlov's dogs.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
Okay. So, full disclosure, it has been, oh my God, it's been almost 10 years since I took my first like intro to psych class in my undergrad, and that's
Girl,
where I heard
too.
This.
I took it in high school though, and it was the fucking worst. The teacher was the worst. He was such a bad psychology teacher.
Really? Okay, that makes me feel a little better about not taking psychology in high school.
No, just count your blessings. He was the only one teaching psychology, so I am not sorry if he's listening to this. Like, you were a bad psychology teacher. Should have stuck to history. It was a bad time.
Damn. Well,
shade intended.
Oh, shade intended. Shade received. Well, that totally threw me. I don't even remember what I was saying.
I'm sorry. You were about to talk about the dogs.
Oh, no. Nothing to apologize for. The dogs. The dogs. Yeah. So, I hope I'm getting this right. It's been so long.
Oh, my God. Wasn't your spirit animal the dog today, too?
Yeah, it was. Hey, I pulled the dog card. Hey, synchronicities all day long.
Yes.
We've already had so many synchronicities today, anyway.
Oh, I just got a sad.
What?
Killed dogs, not in real life. Oh my God.
No. I was like, what just happened?
No. When I was playing Breath of the Wild last night, a wolf tried to come at me and I had to kill him because his whole pack was coming for me.
Oh no. Okay.
It was very sad. They make the little sad puppy noise. Oh.
I can forgive it in the game. I was real concerned for a minute.
No,
like,
I'm not Cruella
what?
DeVille, unfortunately. Actually, no, fortunately, she's crazy.
She's crazy. Man.
She's like my second favorite villain, though.
Maleficent is first?
Nah, yeah. Hades is first.
Oh, Hades! I forgot about Hades!
Fucking love Hades.
Hades is amazing. Okay, we're way off track.
Eight side stories.
All the time. So, Pavlov. Okay, so... basically, okay, so here's what happened. There was this researcher, someone Pavlov. He's just referred to as Pavlov and his dogs now. And what he would do is he would ring a bell and then he would feed his dogs. And I'm pretty sure that these dogs, when I say his dogs, you know, it gives this image of like, oh, he just has these pet dogs that he loves. Nah, not like that. He was a full-on researcher back in a time when, let's be real, some of the research that they did was not cool in a lot of ways. So this was very much an experiment for him. So he would ring the bell and then he would feed the dogs. And what he did is he would measure their saliva. And so it got to the point that he would ring the bell and not feed them, but measure their saliva. And he found that these dogs had become so accustomed to like, oh, the bell rings, we get food. So when the bell would ring, they would start salivating because their body was preparing for food. That's kind of, in a way, that's social conditioning. It's just like in terms of animals on a more primal level.
Yeah.
They also did, and this is more anecdotal rather than experimental, but one of the ways that they get elephants to stay, tied to a post is that when the elephants are babies, it's like so sad. When the elephants are babies, they tie them to a post that is, you know, too big for them to pull out on their own. And so as the elephant grows, it doesn't realize that it is now big enough to free itself from the post, because when it was first put there, it wasn't strong enough. So that's also kind of social conditioning.
It's like so symbolic of what we do to ourselves or what people have done to... I hate... This is like my shit. I hate that phrase, like what was done to us, because I'm such a person that's in the mindset of life is happening for you, not to you. Mm. But like... That phrase kind of can't be avoided because it is the truth.
I know. It's like it's a both and, right?
Yes.
Ugh. But I feel you, though. So we do. We all kind of chain ourselves to those posts.
It's true.
And like, ugh, that both and is so complex and hard to describe and tease apart.
It is.
Like in the whole other discussion.
Eight side stories.
Right. So those are the things that I think of when I think of social conditioning. And yeah. Like tons of other real world examples. But, you know, I also like to go to the animal examples because... come on, we're all animals, right?
I mean, we're all animals. We've talked about this. I think we have a whole episode on like how we are nature and we are basically everything and all interlaced and connected. So make sure you listen to that.
Right? I like
that. So when you think social conditioning, Hillary, what is the first thing that like pops up for you in terms of the human experience?
So the first place that I always go is like gender roles.
Like, oh, 100%.
That is something we have completely made up and put on ourselves and passed down through generations. True. Like, there is no... it's not like when humans first came into existence, we weren't immediately like, ah, yes, women in the kitchen and men go out and hunt. Like, I know I combined two way different eras in that example, but you get what I mean. Like, these are roles that we... have come to believe we're meant to be in, or we get the message that this is like, oh, as a woman, this is your role. Oh, as a man, this is your role. But that's not necessarily inherent in our nature. It's something that we're socialized into.
It's true.
And it doesn't work for everyone.
Fuck. For myself, I've talked about this multiple times, I was raised Mormon, devout Mormon, and like practiced, preached, fucking drank the Kool-Aid for 18 years, like heavily drank the Kool-Aid. Mm-hmm. Like girl was drunk. I was like in the punch bowl, just drowning in there, head under the water completely, couldn't see outside of the punch.
Like, in the punch bowl.
Drinking that Kool-Aid. And... it's nuts to me because I was so, like, when you're in, eight fucking Mercury retrograde, okay?
I know, right?
I have, like, so many feelings that just popped up for me.
Seriously.
But in terms of that, there are so many things that, like, when you're in it, when you are under that, like, conditioning illusion, you cannot see outside of it.
Yeah.
And, like, it's so hard and it's... either to me because you don't want to or because somebody has put that on you that you shouldn't even look outside of it.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing about Mormonism anyways, and maybe some of you guys can relate that are ex-Mormon. I know a lot of people that are ex-Mormon reach out to me. The crazy thing is that they condition you not to question. Mm-hmm. Like when you're in the thick of it, and let's be real, Mormonism is bad for women. I don't care who you are. Mm-hmm. It's bad for women. There is so much social conditioning towards women, towards sexuality, doesn't allow freedom of expression. And that's just how I feel about all that. Mm-hmm. but they, A, teach you not to question any of it. And so it's like, oh, well, if you're struggling with this and we don't have an answer for you, just like ask God for an answer. Like, I can't even express to you how many years of frustration.
Yeah.
And how much sexual repression due to conditioning happened.
Totally. Totally. And you know what? That's also, I think, kind of a hallmark of social conditioning that really takes a hold of us is that it gets you to a point where you don't question it. So like...
exactly.
Oh my gosh. I have these two things coming to me. So like... one, I have this image of if anyone has or has had a house cat that is an only indoor cat.
Yes.
And have you ever noticed when they see an outdoor cat, what their reaction is? They perk up and they suddenly look around like, wait, hold on. What? You're out there? You're doing what? Like they can't quite understand it and they're so fascinated by it because... yeah. They don't look outside that much. You know, they don't see outdoor cats that much. Like,
or, fascinatingly enough, it's either a fascination or I've seen it where it's very territorial.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you see an outdoor cat and, like, the indoor cat will just perk up and, like, puff up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And try to protect it because they don't know anything different.
Absolutely. Which is so symbolic. And I know it's, like, different with animals to an extent, but I feel like we kind of do that, too. You know, like,
oh,
Look at that bitch over there. That kind of attitude.
Eating her chips. Who the fuck does she think right? she is? Sorry, I had to do it. I had to say it.
I was waiting for it. That's why I said it like that. Oh, and another thing. I've probably shared this story before, but this really, I feel like this is kind of what we're talking about. There's this old story, and there's a wonderful speech. I've probably shared it in our description before, but I'll see if I can find it again and put the link down there. I'm sorry, I forget who does it. But he said something about, like, okay, so there's these two fish, an older fish and a younger fish. Two young fish are swimming through the water. They come across an older fish. And this older fish looks at them and goes, "Morning, boys. How's the water?" And the two fish kind of nod, and they're like, "Eh, sure, you know, whatever, good." And they keep swimming along. And then one of the fish, one of the younger fish, looks at the other younger fish and goes, "What the hell is water?" And, like, that's what social conditioning is, and that's what you were talking about, you know?
Totally.
We're so in it.
I was in the punch bowl, man. I right? wasn't just drinking it. I was drowning in it with my head under.
Right? And so we can't see outside of it. It's like a horse with blinders on. For some reason, all yes. these images and metaphors are coming to me today. I don't know. Maybe it's the coffee. It's
like, you're just a fortune cookie. It's okay.
But I feel like that's what I think about, and it's such a good point that I feel like when social conditioning is working in the way that people in power want it to work,
yes,
it works in such a way so that we don't even realize that we've been conditioned to be a certain way.
Yes. And I think for me, the hardest part, and I love and hate this about myself, if I'm honest, mm-hmm. the hardest part for me in dealing with social conditioning, especially when you start to take those blinders off, mm-hmm. is that the people around you don't always follow suit.
Yes.
And so then you are stuck in this, like, yeah, but if you could see it the way that I see it.
Yes.
But at the same time, you don't want to be holier than thou. It's of like course. This whole, like, yeah. I get it because I've been where you are. But if you could just, like, take off that blindfold, you would see things so differently.
Right? And I think that's really
that's my
tough.
Biggest internal struggle with Mormonism anyways.
Oh, yeah. And I think it's really tough, too, because there's a very real level of, like, you know, appropriate boundaries, and we're not here to fix anyone. We can't tell anyone what to do. And I say we as, like, the collective we, all of us. There are things that I'm sure we see in other people. I know I have moments where I look at my some yeah. of my loved ones, and I'm like, ah. If you had this tool, or if you could see it in this way, or whatever it may be, oh, maybe you'd feel so much better, and I want that for you. But yeah. also, we don't get to decide that for other people.
No.
And that's so hard when it's like...
It's such a harsh reality.
Like, figuring out, for me, with social conditioning in particular, I know that being able to, like, recognize it and think critically and, like, really get to know it, I guess, for me, it opened up this whole new way of thinking, being, seeing, living, and in the best kind of way. And I think that's mm-hmm. what's hard, is when we look at people that we care about and we're like, oh, but it helped me so much. Like, I want it to help you too. Like, I wish you could yeah. see it this way. And yet, where do we set those boundaries, right?
Right.
It's so tough.
And it's tough. Because even when you face that, or say you're like squaring off with somebody about that, you're literally fighting about the same thing. Mm. You won't see it their way and they won't see it your way. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, but if you could see it my way, like, even if you think, if one person thinks the other person is more blind, you both think that of each other. So yeah. it's like, yeah, it brings up that image for me with the, like, two caged images of men and then the children inside.
I was just thinking about that. Yes. Like, when we're arguing with each other, there's just two kids inside of us who want to connect.
Yeah.
Oh, it's totally. So true. I feel like social conditioning is really hard because it's one of those things that does go very unseen. Like, I think about schools, for instance. And to me, the way we've set up our schools, oh my God, talk about social conditioning. You are meant to sit in very specific way. Like, okay, everyone is in these neatly laid out rows. It doesn't matter what age you are. You all sit in rows. You sit still, preferably. You don't do anything that is quote unquote disruptive. And for like a 5-year-old who has the energy to be running around all day, to tell them, like, no, sit still and be quiet. how much does that, number one, go against our nature, and number two, start implanting ideas really early on about, like, what is acceptable of your behavior as a human in our society?
Oh.
Right?
That brought up two things for me. One really pleasant and happy, and one that's like,
Oh, I'm really glad there was a good thing in there.
Well, the good thing was it reminded me of me and you and Andrew going to the park by my house and rolling down hills.
Yeah.
Because I was like, yeah, we all connected with our inner child. We saw this big ass hill, and Hillary was the first one. She was like, I have this really big inclination. I just need to roll down this hill. And then you were like, I don't remember what you said, but you like considered not doing it. And I was like, no, we should do it. We should definitely do it.
Those are the kinds of friends we all need. Like,
I know. We should definitely do it.
You all go out and find friends who will encourage you to roll down grassy hills and play on children's playgrounds. Those are the kind of friends we all need.
It just made me feel like, for like, even if it was just for an evening, all three of us just like got out of that and just connected with what we wanted internally, which was really beautiful.
Right? And that's then, how we break it.
Yes. Yay. And then on the flip side, I was also thinking about how I hate that fucking phrase, get your shit together.
Mm.
I hate it because it just implies so much.
Yeah.
It implies that the other person thinks that they know what you need more than you know what you need. It implies that they think that your life needs to be a certain way, mm-hmm. conditioned. Mm-hmm. And the saddest part about it is they've probably picked up that phrase from somebody who said it to them first.
Right? Right? It's so true. Oh my gosh. Speaking of things that we pick up from other people saying, I'm not going to launch into a whole thing about this, though I really want to because I'm writing my thesis on it. But still. Not the point. If y'all are interested, and I'm sure we'll probably talk about this more later, but in how men and boys are conditioned in our society, there's a wonderful documentary called The Mask You Live In, and they really go into exactly what you just said, Chloe, about how, like, early on, these messages, actually Misrepresentation is a sister documentary about how women are represented in the media, which also factors into social conditioning. Highly recommend both of them. But the point is, in The Mask You Live In, they talk about how really, really early on, our little boys, like 3, 4, 5 years old, they're getting messages about what it means to be a man. You know?
Oh, yeah.
All of these things. Don't cry. Toughen up. Don't be a girl. Don't be a sissy. All of these even worse things that boys hear. And that, just the words that we say, especially early on, can really change how we see ourselves, how we live our lives. And that is social conditioning. To me, that's how it starts, is like someone says something to you and then other people reinforce that over and over and over.
Yep.
It's like, really problematic.
True story, at least from the feminine perspective. I know we didn't want to get into a whole thing, but dialing it straight back, because that's always what I direct my energy at, because that's what I know of social conditioning at its peak for me anyways. Mm-hmm. I remember graduating high school and all that I wanted was to be a wife and a mom.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's it. That was my life mission.
Mm-hmm.
There was and like, I'm not trying to shit on people that like, that's what you want to do with your life. Mm-hmm. I think that's great if that's truly what your heart desires.
Absolutely.
But the fact of the matter is, I see myself now. I'm 28, so it took less than 10 years because I realized this before now. But I, like, don't want to be a mom ever.
Mm-hmm.
That is, like, that sounds like hell to me. That is something I absolutely do not want to do.
Right?
And it's still, like, maybe on the table, but my husband and I have just kind of said we'll address it if we ever decide to change our minds about it.
Mm-hmm.
But how insane, like, living in that space of being conditioned to believe that that was all that I was good for.
Yes.
Was like, nope, you're here to raise kids. You're here to raise kids. You're here to raise kids.
Right?
Like, no, fuck that. Fuck that mentality.
Yes. And think about how many ways throughout our lives, like going with that example, as a woman, think of how many ways throughout our lives we are given the message, even in little ways, even in like a couple words, that that's all we're good for. Like, how many times do people say things to us that are like, oh, when you have kids, not if, when.
It's when.
You know? And that has been said to, I guarantee, I would say probably upwards of 90% of women have heard those phrases starting, I'd say, at least before age 10.
100%.
You know?
I've heard it in so many ways, too. Or, like, right? When you have kids, you'll understand.
Right. Or like, this ooh. One. Oh, when you find a man who says it has to be a man and who says you need anyone.
Yeah. Fuck that.
Like, all of those are social conditioning. And it's reinforced throughout our lives in these little comments, these little ways that make us feel like if we don't fit into that box that everyone thinks we should fit into, then there's something wrong and shameful about us. And that's not true.
Well, even playing back on that get your shit together, most people that say that are in my experience when it's been said to me, which multiple times, I'm kind of one of those ride by the seat of my pants, think about the consequences tomorrow. Aries, Mercury, what up? think about the consequences tomorrow. But for me anyways, it wasn't just like the wife and mom thing. It was like, when are you going to buy a car and own a house and do like these normal people, quote unquote, things where in reality, I have no fucking desire to own a home ever.
Right.
I don't see myself having that because I don't want it.
Right. And you know what? As we're talking about it, I'm realizing how much shame factors in to keeping people in these boxes. You know, like Brené Brown in exactly what you're saying. She's amazing. She said, shame for women is do it all, do it perfectly, and never let them see you sweat. You know?
I just cheers Tillery with my coffee.
And it was lovely. But like, I feel like that's how we get people to stay in their lane, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And think about all the consequences of that. Because this is what drives me nuts and why I really wanted to talk about social conditioning. If we allow other people outside of us, usually people who have more power than we do, more influence than we do, more fill in the blank than we do, if we allow
them... Or we perceive it that way.
Right? If we allow these people, or anyone really, to tell us who we are, who we need to be, what we are, what we need to be... Number one, what does that do to us individually? But number two, think about it collectively. This reinforces things like gender inequality, like racism, like the socioeconomic status gap, massive gap that we have. Like all of these things that keep certain people down and keep others up.
Yeah.
And that just replicates all of these terribly... generally speaking, discriminatory or oppressive systems that are already in play. And so the same types of people get pushed down, and the same types of people get into positions of power to make change. But are they going to make a change if they're already in power, if they're already benefiting? I think that's why it gets to me so much, is I'm like, well, hang on, if we just allow ourselves to be in those boxes... aren't we just playing into this system?
We're feeding the machine.
Right? I know. I'm sorry to bring everything down so much right there.
I feel like, and I was telling Hillary this morning, how I feel like right now I'm in a really weird place in my life where my, like, soul and inner, like, I say soul, but you could say, like, that's just you at your core level, it's your higher self, whatever, wants to evolve and is ready to, like, go to the next level, but my ego is just, like, shackled me to the wall and is like, nope, you gotta stay in this box. This is where you live. This is your home. Right? Deal with it. And... I realize that actually it's really just an inner war of social conditioning.
Yeah.
It's really just an inner battle of like, because even if you take this back from like collective and onto a one-to-one, well, it could be collectively as well because it happens a lot. We're also conditioned in a way that hurts. I mean, it always hurts, but it hurts because you try to express even a feeling. This goes for all genders. You try to express a feeling on something and a lot of us will get hit with, well, you're just too sensitive. I can't say anything to you.
Right.
Or it's almost like I feel like a lot of us do feel that it's unsafe to step out of the conditioning.
Yeah.
Because we're constantly met with this push it down, don't look at it,
Yes.
You're being ridiculous. That's not how the world works. Someday you'll understand how the world works.
Right?
I feel like right now I'm kind of touching on a generational gap right now, but...
True, though.
Social conditioning hurts because we're constantly being, not constantly from everyone, but from a large amount of us are being told, you're just too sensitive. I can't say anything to you. Or that's not how the world works. Someday you'll understand how the world really works. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that really feeds into the machine. That feeds into, nope, just stay in line, fall in line, do it how we've always done it. It's not really helping anyone.
Yeah.
And if we could all just fucking see and hear each other, and that goes both ways, like from the person that maybe is saying those things and the person who's trying to express something different and new, we just need to hear and see each other.
Yes. And I think what's also so important here is like humans are a social species, you know? Yes. Like, so the messages we get from people around us hold a lot of weight. Because if we feel like we're being rejected by the group, that can be perceived, even unconsciously, as a threat to our survival. So this is why social conditioning works, is because we're like, oh no, they don't approve of me. Oh no, they're going to abandon me. Oh no, they don't accept me. And that feels like, that's a threat to me. That's a threat to my survival. Yeah. And so, okay, I'll just fall in line. And what does Brené Brown say? She says, what was it? Fitting in is the opposite of belonging.
Ooh, I love that.
Right? I love that too, because it's so true when you think about it. Like, you belong when you're yourself. You fit in when you're trying to fit in.
I love that. I'm literally writing that down.
I love her so much. It's ridiculous.
I know. We're going to be best friends with her. Just wait. And then we'll be all corny someday, enjoying a glass of wine with her. We'll be like, listen to all the times that we said we were going to be your friend on our podcast.
Right? It's so true. So I'm wondering if maybe, because I feel like there's so much we can talk about around social conditioning. And I feel like we've given a lot of examples, and there's so many more. Like,
just, well, I feel like you're hitting it really broad, which is good. And I'm hitting it really like close to home and personal. So I feel like we're getting both, which is good.
Yes. That's such our style.
It is. It is.
And I'm wondering about that flip side. Like, I feel like talking about what brought it to our awareness, you know, like, like what made us start seeing the water that we were swimming in, you know?
Oh my God, what did make me start seeing the fucking Kool-Aid? It was Kool-Aid for me, all right?
That makes sense.
Did make me start seeing the Kool-Aid? I think, honestly, this is such a small thing, but one of the first things, first of all, I was raised by a woman who says you don't, like, doesn't take shit from anyone. Mm. If there is one thing I could say my mother instilled in me for the best, like, nobody tells me what to do. Like, and my mom is the same way. Nobody tells her what to do. Nobody tells me what to do. And bless my roommate's fucking heart, because I know she was pure intention and she's a good person. Like, I still talk to her, love her to death, mm-hmm. nothing against her. She was just doing her quote unquote job. I lived with the Relief Society president when I first came out to college. I had like four other roommates in this tiny ass apartment. And she, if you guys don't know what a Relief Society president is, it's basically someone in the Mormon church that like oversees the women mm-hmm. in a way. And they have a lot of responsibility on their shoulders. And part of it is like making sure that the other quote unquote sisters are coming to church, coming to the activities, getting people involved. That's a big part of their job. Mm-hmm. And so I remember her sitting me down and having a discussion with me and saying, Chloe, you really need to be coming to your church meetings. And I didn't say anything in the moment, but I remember not even 20 minutes after, I just had a real good pep talk with myself in the mirror. And I was like, no, nobody gets to fucking tell me what to do. I know she was doing in her heart what she felt was right. And I don't blame her. I really want to make that clear.
Of course.
She was doing her best.
Yeah.
But to me, I took that and was like, no, you don't get to tell me what to do. I can be anywhere I want to be. And if I don't want to fucking go to church, I'm not going to fucking go to church. Mm-hmm. And that was the moment that I realized that I actually hated church. Never have enjoyed it. Even as a kid, I never enjoyed it. And I never went back to church after that. So that was probably like my first big, I don't have to do anything. Because mm-hmm. It was also my first time on my own without like parental overseeing. And I was definitely like a diehard mommy's girl growing up and definitely a very, definitely social condition to be very like, this is the way it is. I will always behave, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Definitely a perfectionist, never wanted to disappoint my parents. I was that kind of kid.
Same.
And so when that light switch clicked on that I didn't have to be anywhere and nobody could make me, mm-hmm. It was a whole different bitch inhabiting this body.
That's awesome. I love that.
I think that was like the first thing over the course of like a fucking like 4-year travel trying to figure it out.
That's amazing.
But yeah, that was the moment that stopped me dead in my tracks and like made me look at what I had been taught and what I actually believed.
It's fantastic.
So I guess thanks, Mom, for teaching me that nobody puts baby in the corner. All right, you guys, we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Doing our ad breaks is hilarious, you guys, because we actually take a break in seconds. Yes. And me and Hillary just sit here like, I don't know about you, Hillary, but I just think about the Jeopardy music.
Yes.
Did you think about it too?
Yeah. Like it's a split between that and the ticking of a clock. Like,
yeah.
Oh, we look so crazy.
Welcome back, everyone. So what for you, Hillary, made you, like, where do you think that first started happening? You took that critical lens.
You know, that's such a good question. I mean, I'm really glad that we, like, wanted to talk about what made us start to think about it. And I think, you know, when I asked you and you were like, oh, I have to think about that, I realized, oh, you know what? I have to think about it, too. Like,
it's... I mean, don't get me wrong. I think there's also multiple points where it happens and things yes. change. Because, and I've talked about this 1,000 times, and I'll talk about it 1,000 times more, but the passing of my sister was another one of those moments
yeah.
where I started to really take a critical lens to even more things than just my spirituality.
Right? I mean, weirdly, in video game terms, I'd say it's like leveling up on consciousness, like just
yes.
a little bit at a time, right?
Yes.
So I think, like, I know that for me, therapy and mindfulness really, really played a big role in getting me to start thinking about these things critically. Like, a lot of the therapists that I had, and I have no shame about the fact that I have been in therapy for a long time.
I think that's wonderful. To be honest with
right?
you, I think it's a fucking shame that me and at least my sister right above me were not in therapy as children for a lot of reasons.
I mean, it was so helpful because you have someone who's like, oh, wow, it sounds like, you know, for an example, something like, you know, it sounds like you think about yourself pretty harshly. I feel like that's a thing that I heard a lot in therapy, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, to have someone be like, ooh, wow, the way you talk to yourself isn't very nice. Suddenly you're like, oh, shit, that's true.
Aww,
I can change
small
that.
Small side story. The first time anyone has ever said that to me was actually you. And it was really, like, I needed to hear it. It was when you were here and I was crying because I was upset about a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And you were like, Chloe, you're so hard on yourself. And I was like, oh. I am hard on myself.
Like. Right? And that's so sweet. Like, my heart. I feel like that's something that a lot of us struggle with. But this is also where I feel like social conditioning and I'll throw out another weird fancy word, introjection. Ooh. Introjection is basically taking something that someone says to you and then taking it internally, and then you're saying it to yourself. Like, you take what they yeah. say and you're like, oh shit, that's true about me.
Oh shit.
Yeah. So, like, I feel like those things happen to a lot of us, or
oh,
rather
100%.
We do that to ourselves a lot, like all of us, with very few exceptions. And to me, that's part of social conditioning too. Like, okay, maybe this is just my own personal experience, but for me, thinking critically about, like, who does it benefit or what does it benefit for me to feel badly about myself? Because someone benefits, you know?
Oh, 100%. I feel the same way about boundaries.
Right?
People benefit when you don't have boundaries. Yes. So, like, when somebody has a problem with your boundaries, side note again, ask yourself, like, why they have such a problem. It's usually because they're benefiting from the fact that you don't have one.
Exactly. And I feel like those kinds of critical questions, that's what therapy was really helpful for me, is like the critical questions about like how I treat myself, how I live my life, how I relate to others, that kind of stuff. And mindfulness allowed me to zoom out of it enough to be like, oh, wow, this is weird. But I think really for me, early experiences were the things that I started to really, I think, I'm not sure if I've shared this on the podcast before, but when I was really young, I was diagnosed with ADHD. And again, this is nothing, I feel like there's weird stigma and shame around mental health stuff. And I am just still like,
though, we are here to break that because
right? There's no shame in it.
That is something my therapist said to me, and I really appreciated it, was she was, because I was freaking out over, like, this huge fucking page of mental diagnoses that I was right? given. And she was like, Chloe, we could pull anyone in here literally off the street, and they would have at least 2 to 3 of those same things.
It's like, so true.
And everybody has something going on.
I also just, like, have to throw out there real quick, like, and I won't launch into a whole thing about this, but the way that we diagnose people, there's so many flaws in diagnosis in general.
Someday I'm going to open up with you guys a lot more about my crazy psychiatrist that I'll never see again.
And I, honest to God, I mean, I could rant about the DSM for days, man. That's the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders.
Ugh. My therapist, love her. My psychiatrist, no. Just no.
Have you ever heard the other name for the DSM?
No.
It's the Dumb Stupid Manual.
Love it.
Anyway, I'm not saying that all diagnoses are bad. There's some value to some of it. However, what I am saying is that at a certain age, so when I was really young, I was diagnosed with ADHD. And when I was a kid, because in some ways I was too smart for my own good. Like, let's be real. Because people were trying to explain it to me and really, like, they did a really good job explaining it in terms of, like, how you can explain this to a kid. But they would say things like, you know, oh, it's just, there's something different about your brain. And then they'd say, you know, attention deficit disorder and, like, all of these things. The problem is I was too smart for my own good, and so I would pick up on things like there's something wrong with your brain. So there's something chemical in you that's already a problem, right? So it can't be fixed because it's your brain. And deficit, oh, that means that something's wrong, right? Like all of these little things. So in schools, like I talked about, there's a very specific way of having kids be in a classroom.
Yeah.
I had the hardest time staying focused, staying on task, staying still, all of that kind of stuff. And I felt a lot of shame. I was called out in class by students. Some teachers treated me differently, like all kinds of little things that were really terrible as a kid. To the point that I felt like there's something wrong with me because I can't conform to what every other kid in class is doing, right? And then I got older. And then I started thinking about it critically. And something inside me one day clicked, and something in me just went, wait a second. 5-year-olds aren't meant to sit still for hours on end, you know? And I started thinking, what if it's not that there's something wrong with me? What if it's that there's something wrong with the system, how we're socializing us kids, you know, what we're making kids do at certain ages? Maybe there's something wrong with that. Maybe it's not actually a problem with me. Maybe I'm okay. Maybe all of us are okay. And that, I think, was the biggest thing that I started. I think that was the start of it. And then once you start looking at one area of your history or your life critically, oof, you better believe it translates to every other area. And so then it was like, oh, well, what about how I have been acting my whole life? Like, what about this perfectionist thing? Where does that come from? Why is that important? And I think you touched on that too. Like, there's some messages that we all get. And so we start developing these parts of ourselves, these ways that we exist with others or with ourselves. And it all serves a purpose. And often I find a lot of it goes back to this social conditioning. Is like, yeah. Oh, I was given the message that this is how I'm meant to be. And so if I could be that, then I would be okay. I would be accepted by the group, you know? And yes. I think weirdly, and I don't know, this is just a thought that I'm having right now. I wonder if there's some way that we've combined in our minds being accepted by the group and being happy. Do we combine those in our minds? Because I don't think they're necessarily the same.
I feel like I do, and I really hate that.
Same.
I need to separate that shit.
Right? And there's so much that comes with that, too. Because, you know, what does it take to be accepted by the group? Does it take sacrificing parts of ourselves? If so, is it really worth it? And if so, does that really mean that we'll be happy if we've sacrificed parts of ourselves?
Agreed.
So I don't know. I mean, the origin of me, like, breaking out of it, I really do think that I started breaking out of these ways of thinking and started looking at it critically. Probably when I entered trauma therapy, that was around the time I started getting into mindfulness as well. I think the combination of those two together was really helpful for me.
Yes.
But I think that the roots go way, way back, you know?
Sorry, I'm like, my brain just had like a total like unregister malfunction. What is this Mercury retrograde, you guys?
It's okay. You know what's really funny? As soon as you said that, I was like, wait, what happened? Because your screen is frozen too.
Oh, I see. I was shaking my head at you, and I was like, wait, what had happened was.
Oh my god, one second. There we go. Okay.
Goodness gracious.
Anyway, Mercury retrograde.
It's fucking with us today.
It really is. It really is. The amount of times we've had to like restart our little video and everything.
It's been insane.
Oh my god.
But yeah. Is there anything else you think that we should add to this, Hillary, besides giving our where it came from?
I think the only thing that is coming up for me, I mean, two things, I guess. Like, one, obviously, the examples we've given are just a couple. There's, like, infinite ways that this comes up. And second, I just feel the real need to point out that, like, those of us who fall into social conditioning or who put it on others, I don't think it's intentional.
I don't think so either.
Right? Like, I feel like it's just, like, you fall into a role. You fall into this way of thinking or feeling or behaving, and it's reinforced by others, so you assume that it's supposed to be right for you, even if it doesn't feel quite right. And so then you put it on others, particularly if you don't quite know that, like, maybe it's not quite right for you or for them. I don't think it's intentional, but I do think that we all do it, you know?
I agree.
So it's not something to, like, call people out on and be like, you're doing this to me. It's nothing like that. It's more just like, how are we all doing this to each other and to ourselves? And what are the repercussions of that?
Yes. So I think mainly for the homework, that's what we wanted to challenge you guys to do, is just take a critical look at your life. Ask yourself why you believe certain things that you believe. Is it your own conviction, or is it something that somebody else has given to you?
Yeah.
And I mean, all of it's okay. Mm-hmm. If you're like thriving and that's where you want to be, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And even though, like, I talk about Mormonism the way I do, and like I said, I know a lot of people follow me for that perspective, there are still plenty of members of my family that what I would consider drink the Kool-Aid, but they're happy. And that's great for them. Like, exactly. I'm happy for them.
Right?
Just doesn't work for me. So I think that's a big part of it, too. When you're looking at it with a critical lens, like, even if you decide to go another direction, recognize that even if the other people don't follow you, and I am not perfect at this, the other people don't follow you, like, if they're happy and thriving, then, like, let them be. That's their truth. Let them have that.
Exactly.
You can find your own. They don't have to be the same.
Yes. So true. Absolutely. I mean, the key is, like, we're not here to create more shame by doing this or having this conversation. It's to have less shame. To be like, oh, this is what works for me and that's what works for you. And both are okay.
It's just, both are valid.
Yeah, right?
As long as you're not, like, you know, hurting yourself or hurting others. And exactly. I don't mean, like, I feel like some people get it confused. Like, oh, you're hurting me. But, like, in reality, your choices, if they don't directly impact somebody else's, like, livelihood and how they live, you're not hurting them. That's their issue.
Though. It's so true.
And I know a lot of us have that where we feel, like, almost manipulated into it. So don't fall to that either.
Yeah, exactly.
Or at least try to take the lens and see it for what it is.
Right? And I think
easier said than done sometimes.
Oh, always. I think that that's, like, the key, you know, in that taking that critical look. Just look at it critically, not to judge, but to figure out how you can best be yourself. Live in a way that is integral and aligned with what you think, feel, believe, and who you think that you are. You know?
Yes.
That's what's important.
Love it.
Yay.
All right, you guys. Next week, we're going to be talking about meditation to kind of go in line with what we've talked about today. And thank you so very much for joining us. Please don't forget to follow us on all of our socials. Oh, my God,
Mercury
Retrograde. Stop it. Fucking Mercury Retrograde. On all of our socials, we are at Twin Flames Pod. All those links will be down below. If you would like to get your hands on a free meditation that Hillary herself recorded, be sure to either rate us on Apple Podcasts or follow us on one of the socials. Take a screenshot of it, preferably from your phone because it's easier, but you can do it from a computer, and email that to us, and we will send you the free meditation back. No gimmicks, no strings attached. We don't have an email list. It's not like that.
True, though.
We genuinely just want to make sure we're getting that engagement with you guys. That's really our motivation there.
Yes.
And I think, if you have a question, you can also leave that. We have a link down below where you can actually record an audio question and send it to us. You can also just email us questions, concerns, thoughts, comments. We'd like to hear from you guys. We do our best to respond to everyone. We do have some questions actually waiting for us that we need to address, but we haven't. Sorry about that.
I know. Sorry.
I think we forgot before we recorded.
I know. We'll get right on it.
Yeah, we'll get right on it. But we love you guys so much, and we hope you have a fantastic week. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
Bye.
Bye.